almost certainly went too far. In once again bringing up this idea, didn't specifically come out and say it was a false flag operation, didn't explicitly come out and say that this whole thing was staged, but did suggest once again that the people speaking out after Parkland were actors. This is partially true because most of the kids that we heard from after Parkland were members of the Parkland Drama Club. Okay? And they lost their friends, the same as everyone else. They were hiding in the school terrified, the same as everyone else. Because they are naturally gifted public speakers, and because they have been trained and coached in public speaking through their acting work, they were a natural fit for the news media. They were able to articulate and able to explain what was going on and able to explain their views better than the average 15, 16-year-old who has never had a camera stuck in his face and or had to get up in front of an audience and say, well, this is what happened and this is what I believe. These kids are gifted storytellers, and these kids are gifted performers, and these kids are gifted with language. Now, that is not the same as what Alex Jones put forward, which is, well, they're hired actors who are hired by the left to go out and convince America that you should lose your guns. This is one of Alex Jones' favorite things, is they're coming to take your guns away. No one's coming to take your guns away. Okay, no one. No one in the Trump administration is coming to take your guns away, kids. You can be sure of that. As long as you're a law-abiding American citizen, you will be able to have all the guns you want. The government is even coming to take your high-capacity magazines away. And I think they should be. But they're not. Yet Alex Jones has found this audience that believes in all of these conspiracy theories that he puts forward. And they give him money, so he keeps talking about his conspiracy theories. A lot of people would like to see Alex Jones go away. I think that is a natural reaction. Wanting to see it happen and actually seeing it happen, however, are two very different things. And over the weekend, it happened. This began late last week. Facebook, which is under siege for a host of valid reasons, not the least of which being the Cambridge Analytica screw-up, where millions of people had their personal data sold to Steve Bannon and Cambridge Analytica, mine included. I was a victim of that. Never used any of those Facebook apps, by the way. I don't use them. I barely use Facebook. Never used any of the apps, but some one of my friends did. So Cambridge Analytica got access to my whole profile. I can't even get access to my whole profile. Steve Bannon knows more about what Facebook has on me than I do. And believe me when I tell you, I am not comfortable with that. But either way, it's not an issue that keeps me up at night. But Facebook is under fire, rightfully, from a lot of different places. And Mark Zuckerberg has been making his endless apology tours, you know, where he puts on his big boy suit that doesn't quite fit him right. And smiles and says, well, you know, we're freedom of speech, and, you know, we're not publishers, we're a platform, and, well, you know, let people in. Alex Jones is a particular burr in the side of a lot of people in this country. And Facebook has been under particular pressure to stop Alex Jones, because here's a little bit of truth that I'm gonna throw at you right now. If you have a nascent political movement, say you are opposed to free speech, you don't like free speech because you don't like what some people say, and you think it gets in the way of your message, or it makes you feel bad, or it makes you emotional, if you're a nascent political movement, the easiest way to become a bigger political movement is to knock off some low-hanging fruit. And this is a term that we use in the marketing world and in the advertising world. Low-hanging fruit is something that is ready to drop, easy to reach. You got a nice ripe apple hanging at the bottom of the tree. That's low-hanging fruit. All you got to do is breathe on it, and it's going to fall into your hands, and you're going to get what you want, and you get to claim victory. So all of these free speech haters, these neo-fascists on the left, started going after Facebook and saying, why is Alex Jones here? 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 And Facebook is so desperate to win back the good graces of anyone in this country that they banned some of his videos. They took four of his videos offline. YouTube did the same thing. Took some of his videos offline. Spotify took a few episodes of his podcast offline. And they did that late last week. That was not enough to appease the neo-fascists. They don't want some Alex Jones gone. They want all Alex Jones gone. Alex Jones, in their eyes, is an enemy of the United States of America and should be silenced. Alex Jones has forfeited his First Amendment rights by virtue of the things that he's said. That is not how the First Amendment works. That is not how the First Amendment is written. First Amendment very specifically says one thing. Government shall not abridge the rights of the people to say what they want. Paraphrasing a bit, but that's the essence of the whole thing. Government cannot tell people what to say. Government cannot walk into a newsroom and say, you must say this. Government cannot go to private individuals and say, you cannot say this, except in very limited circumstances. You cannot yell fire in a crowded theater. You cannot incite others to violence. So Facebook takes down some videos. Spotify takes down some podcasts. YouTube takes down some videos. Not enough. Not enough for the fascists on the left, who start in once again. Why is Alex Jones still here? Why is Alex Jones still here? Why is Alex Jones still here? So over the weekend, things change. Apple pulls all of Alex Jones' podcasts from their site. Facebook follows. They remove all of Alex Jones' content. YouTube pulls down all of Alex Jones' content. Spotify pulls off all of Alex Jones' content. Other people within InfoWars are still up, by the way. Other editors, other publishers, but anything that Alex Jones himself, his podcasts, his videos, things that he's posted over the last few years, gone. They have erased four of the biggest media platforms in the United States of America. Four of the biggest media platforms in the world have erased Alex Jones. And they've done this on the grounds of hate speech. That's why they say they've done this. It's hate speech. Because hate speech, apparently, is not protected by the First Amendment. That would be news to me. That would be news to the Supreme Court. That would be news to a lot of people. This is not a First Amendment issue per se. Because Facebook, Apple, Spotify, YouTube are all private companies. And First Amendment protections do not extend to private companies. Private companies are free to do whatever they want. Private companies are free to say, we don't want Alex Jones here. You're gone. The government can't shut Alex Jones up. The government can't come in and say, you can't say that anymore. You need to stop talking about Sandy Hook being a false flag operation. You need to stop talking about 9/11. Government can't do that. But these private companies can. And that's an important distinction to understand in all of this. But it is also part of the problem. Now, I mentioned in our first hour that we have a weak central government. And it is weak on this issue of personal rights, individual rights, your individual right to freedom of speech. And to understand this, you have to understand what YouTube is and what Facebook is. These companies exist and are allowed to do what they do because of exemptions given to them by the federal government. Acts that were passed in the 1980s and the 1990s that were designed to allow the internet to flourish basically gave all of these platforms, as they like to call themselves, broad exemptions, including exemption from liability for what people publish. So if Alex Jones comes along and publishes something that causes emotional distress to a Sandy Hook family member on Facebook, on YouTube, on Apple, on Spotify, on any of them, that family member cannot turn around and sue those big tech platforms for allowing Alex Jones to publish. In recent years, they have been subject to stricter copyright laws. And the government has more or less said, if you allow someone to publish copywritten material, so in other words, if I were to go on YouTube and put up videos of Pet Shop Boys songs or Rolling Stones songs or Beyonce songs, and YouTube just let them sit there and people downloaded that stuff millions of times to get the music for free, Beyonce could go sue YouTube. Because the federal government has said you do have a responsibility to enforce copyright. But in all other aspects, we do not consider you to be publishers. This is the critical piece of this. And this is where the federal government is weak. If I publish a newspaper, if I publish a magazine, if I'm on the radio, as I am right now, I am a publisher. Okay? People have made the decision to allow me to be on these airwaves. People have made the decision to write and put something into a newspaper. And that opens them up to all different kinds of liability. And it opens those of us who practice in this space up to personal liability. So if I get in here and say things that are completely untrue about somebody, I can rightfully expect to be sued, and Tufts University can rightfully expect to be sued, and I will not be here anymore. Those of us who are involved in these endeavors, in broadcasting, in journalism, in media, in publishing, get that. We don't have exemption from liability the way that YouTube does, the way that Facebook does, the way they can step back and say, we don't have any control, and this is why they have this. We don't have any control at all over what our users publish. Okay? We can't tell our users what to post or what not to post. You're going to destroy our business model. You're going to end our way of life. Where have we heard that before tonight? You're going to destroy our way of life if you tell us that we are liable for what users post. So the response from the federal government has been fine. You don't have any liability for what people post. But if we ask you to take something down, you have to take it down. If it's copywritten material and the copyright holder comes and says, that's mine, you have to take it down. And they groaned and they whined and they complained and they said, okay, fine. Fine, we'll do that. But they still allowed ISIS to stay on their platforms. They still allow Stormfront and other organizations to stay on their platforms. They've cracked down on this when people have brought it to their attention. But now we get to Alex Jones. Alex Jones is a loathsome individual. I would prefer to live in a world where people like Alex Jones didn't exist, where people like Alex Jones were unable to monetize content, where maybe they could stay in their cabin in the middle of the woods and type out their newsletter and get their 100 readers and feel like they're doing something in the world, not where they are able to mislead and cajole large numbers of Americans. I don't support Alex Jones in any way, shape, or form. However, as somebody who believes in the First Amendment, as somebody who believes in freedom of expression, I must support his right to do what he does. And I must support his ability to do what he does. And when all of these websites simultaneously remove all of his content and cut him off from his audience and silence him, we have a problem. We, in fact, have two problems. The first is we have these technology companies operating as a cartel. Now, what is a cartel? Most of you think of OPEC when I say the word cartel. Some of you may think of Colombian drug lords. That's a cartel too. Cartel is a group of competing interests, competing businesses with shared interests, a shared market or a shared product or what have you, who collude with one another to set standards. So in the case of OPEC, you have all of these oil-producing countries who get together and say, this is what the price of oil is going to be. We want oil to be $50 a barrel. Therefore, we are going to produce X amount of oil. And they decide amongst themselves, you know, everybody agrees, we'll cut production by 10%, we'll gain production by 20%, whatever it is. They control the price of oil, acting as a cartel. For the Colombian drug lords, it was a way of minimizing violence on the streets of the United States. You get the East Coast, you get the West Coast, you get the Midwest, you get the Southwest. This is what we're going to charge for the cocaine. Nobody's going to go into anybody else's territory. We're all going to use the same guy to fly this stuff in here. Let's have a little bit more peace between these organizations, because all of the war and shooting is bad for business. That's how that cartel operates. Now we have all of these social media sites. Facebook, YouTube, Apple, Spotify. Social media, broadcast media, podcast media sites. Colluding, acting as a cartel to decide that Alex Jones should not be heard. And they have to do this, by the way. Because if one of them kept publishing Alex Jones, all of Alex Jones' listeners and followers are going to go over to that one platform. Facebook, Apple, and Spotify drop out, and YouTube keeps Alex Jones online, YouTube gets that audience. And by the way, when you take somebody like Alex Jones off your service, you are costing yourself money, which is another sign that these companies are operating as a cartel, because you can no longer monetize Alex Jones' content. You're taking a financial hit, probably not a big one. So this is problem number one. We have all of these massive social media sites identifying a single individual and purging him, basically purging him from the internet. Twitter still keeps Alex Jones around, but Twitter can't monetize anything, and Alex Jones can't really do much with Twitter. Nobody can do anything worthwhile with Twitter. So we have all these platforms acting as a cartel. That's problem number one. Problem number two is the reason behind it. And the reason behind it, in every case, whether it's Apple, Spotify, YouTube, or Facebook, the reason behind it, same reason given by all four sites, hate speech. No concrete examples of the hate speech were ever provided. They have just thrown out the phrase hate speech, violates our terms and conditions, and remove the content. You can't even look at the content for yourself to see whether or not it rises to what you would consider to be the level of hate speech. This is a problem because someone within these organizations has made an editorial decision on your behalf. Maybe because a bunch of users who were upset were complaining about something. Okay, it is your right, by the way, as an American, to complain about content that you don't like. You can complain about it all day long. You can get into the comments section on YouTube and tell content creators, you're an idiot. You get all your facts wrong. This is the biggest nonsense I've ever heard. Do that all day long. You can complain to YouTube. But YouTube is under no obligation to listen to you. No, but if you start calling it hate speech, now, well, we've violated terms and conditions. But who is the arbiter here? Is it the community? How many people? How many complaints does it take to get something taken down from YouTube, Apple, Facebook, Spotify, all at once? Who made that decision at each one of these companies independently, I think we're supposed to believe? And on what standard, by what standard, on what basis did they make that decision? I don't know that a lot of what Alex Jones has done rises to any reasonable definition of hate speech. Garbage content, yes. Horrifying, yes. Hate speech? Incitement? I don't think so. So someone has made an editorial decision based on their interpretation of hate speech to remove Alex Jones from their platform. Four different companies have done this. Each one of those four companies, in making an editorial decision, stops being a platform. They start being a publisher. When you make editorial decisions, when you, as a newspaper owner, as a radio station owner, as a television station owner, as anybody in the media, starts making decisions about who will and will not be allowed to communicate through your airwaves, through your pages, through your website, you are no longer a platform. You are a publisher. And publishers are subject to a whole different set of rules. So what has happened here is the anti-free speech left, the neo-fascists on the left, saw low-hanging fruit in Alex Jones. They saw somebody so loathsome that everyone would be like, oh, well, thank God that guy's gone. And they complained and they complained and they complained and they said hate speech, hate speech, hate speech. And they convinced these four companies, Apple, Facebook, Spotify, YouTube, a division of Alphabet, parent company of Google, they convinced these four companies to operate as a cartel, to work in concert with one another, to remove Alex Jones content and only Alex Jones content for editorial reasons. This is a little bit like the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Los Angeles Times, and the Dallas Star all getting together and saying, we're not going to run Garfield anymore. And this is a wildly different example. They're all getting together and saying, we're not going to run Garfield anymore. We don't like that cat's obese and that his owner feeds him lasagna. No more Garfield. If a group of newspapers got together and did that, the federal government would be on them in an instant. It would be less than 48 hours before subpoenas from Congress would be going out saying, what are you guys doing? Why are you colluding to keep Garfield out of the newspaper? What basis do you have for that? And the newspapers are going to sit there and they're going to say, well, you can't regulate us. You're the federal government. And they're going to say, whoa, we can't regulate your rights to publish what you want, but we can regulate you when you operate in anti-competitive ways, when you operate as a cartel to limit the free speech of somebody else, which is precisely what's happened here. There has been zero response from anyone in the government. The only response that there has been cheering from the fascist elements in the left, as well as some more moderate elements in the left, who say Alex Jones is gone. That's a good thing. Well, as much as I dislike his content and loathe him for the pain that he's caused to the Sandy Hook families, I might agree with that. I might agree with that on an emotional level. I might agree that we're a little bit better off not having to listen to Alex Jones. But I'm not going to call that a good thing. Because if they can silence Alex Jones today, they can silence someone else tomorrow. And it's all fun and games. It's all well and good. Until they silence a voice that you like. Until they silence a voice that you care about. Until James Gunn loses his job as director of Guardians of the Galaxy 3. Because he published some very poor, off-color, terrible jokes half a decade ago. And a decade ago. So as you sit there and cheer the loss of Alex Jones today, ask who you like who's going to be gone tomorrow. Because what you're cheering is a group of companies, a group of technology companies who allegedly operate platforms where anyone can publish, acting like editors, acting like publishers, and acting like a cartel. That is a significant threat to freedom of speech in the United States of America. And it is an existential threat to certain voices. And not everyone is going to take that quietly if this sort of thing continues to happen. 855-915-9636 is the telephone number. When we come back, the federal government would like you to believe that they are less weak than they actually are on internet issues. And we have highlights from a position paper written by a Democratic senator that offer next to no solutions for any of these problems. So it'll be something for us to laugh at in just a few moments here on WMFO Medford. When Johnny come marching home again, hurrah, tra-la, she's coming by bus or on the ground, hurrah, tra-la, a woman I will shed a tear to see his face so beaten and fair. Just around the corner in the east end of the war, still at the stage of clubs and then hurrah, tra-la.
Okay, gang, so chances are there'll never be an emergency ever, ever again.
Mm-hmm.
But just in case, let's talk about a plan.
Okay.
So who's going to do what? Anyone? Yeah, okay, perfect. We'll figure it out as we go. So who is going to grab the go bag?
What's a go bag? It is a bag we do not have that is filled with things we really, really need in an emergency.
Guess we won't have to worry about it then.
Ah, good point. So we all know who to call if something happens then, right?
I'd have to call Jill, Devin, Melissa, Karen, and... Bruce.
And I will try to call all of you, but Greg doesn't have a cell phone. Dad's phone will have a dead battery.
No doubt.
And Julie will be on the phone with Jill, Devin, Melissa, Karen, and Bruce.
Well, this is great. I am so glad that we don't have a plan.
I know.
Winging It is not an emergency plan. Make sure your kids know what to do during an emergency, who to call, where to meet, what to pack. Visit ready.gov/kids for tips and information. A public service announcement brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Everybody, Jamie Lee Curtis here for RAD, recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. What should you do to stop a friend from driving if they've been drinking? Answer, whatever it takes. Think before you drink. Designate before you celebrate. Choose a designated driver. Remember, friends don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
WMFO Medford 91.5 FM. It is The Big Picture. Derek Gary with you until 9 o'clock tonight. 855-915-9636. Dial those numbers. Give me a call. Say hi. Always nice to hear from the listeners. On the tell, Mikey D will be here at 9 o'clock with everything you need to know about the Boston music scene. Shay Spillane will be back co-hosting with me next week. So if you miss her, you won't miss her for long. Axios is a website dedicated to covering technology. It was created by one of the founders of Politico with sort of the same modus operandi as Politico. What they want to do is give you the deep inside stuff that's happening in the technology world. What they came across was a position paper, and they published this. This is a draft white paper that was written by Senator Mark Warner, D. Virginia, former governor of Virginia, Senator Mark Warner, who believes one of the keys to victory for the Democrats in 2016, 2018, are we in 2018? It's been a long week. One of the keys to victory for the Democrats in 2018 and 2020 is proposals to regulate the internet. And I will agree with this line from his opening statement, and I quote, "Government has failed to adapt and has been incapable or unwilling to adequately address the impacts these trends on privacy and public discourse." He is speaking about the big tech companies, the cartel that I identified in the last segment, Google, Facebook, Apple, Spotify, Twitter. Mark Warner's position is that these companies present a fundamental threat to our democracy. And he correctly says that government has been incapable or unwilling to adequately address the impacts. Senator Warner is 100% correct about this. In some cases, I think it's incapable. Our Congress is old, particularly our Senate is old. They don't use the technology. They don't understand the technology. They don't live with the technology. Somebody tells them how it works. Somebody tells them what's going on, and they nod and they smile and they walk away. They are incapable. He is right. They are incapable of regulating the internet because they don't understand the internet. He also says unwilling. Well, let's remember Facebook, Google, Yahoo, Twitter, throwing big piles of money at both parties. Not just the Republicans, not just the Democrats. They throw their money around. And they got buildings full of lobbyists in Washington, D.C. to make sure that they are not regulated, that they continue to get to do whatever the heck they want. Well, Mark Warner has actually figured out that maybe this is a bad idea. Maybe we should do something about it. Maybe the Democrats should take the lead on this. He then, a couple of paragraphs later, comes up with this gem. Tools like deepfake, allow a user to superimpose existing images and videos onto unrelated images or videos. That definition, by the way, can be found on Wikipedia. And deepfake is not a tool, Senator Warner. Deepfake is not a tool. A deepfake is the result of a process that is used to create a fake video by superimposing one thing on another. It involves machine learning. It involves algorithms. I cannot go to the App Store. I cannot go to the Google Play Store. I cannot go to the dark web and download deepfake and start making deepfakes. That's not... Remember, he said early on, incapable or unwilling to adequately address the impacts. Maybe we'll put him in the incapable category. I have to pull that out because, by and large, a lot of what Senator Warner says in this paper kind of makes sense. He's clearly smarter than most people in Congress. That's probably a little bit like being the fastest person in the three-legged race at the old age home. The bar isn't very high. But Senator Warner is trying. I prefer Ed Markey comes out with stuff like this because Ed Markey generally knows what's going on. But here's what Senator Warner recommends. He's got a grand total of 19 recommendations in here. There are actually 20. I combined two of them into one. We're probably not going to get through all of these, but let's see what we've got. These are his policy options. He wants Democrats to rally behind these policy options that he believes will fix the internet. Number one, label bots. Bots are those programs that automatically post stuff online to try and get your attention. And I maintain that if bots are outlawed, only outlaws will have bots. There is no reliable, discernible technology that can identify bots. And if you try and label bots, if you come up with that technology, if you figure out that way to identify what is a bot and what isn't, and to slap a label on it, you do two things. Number one, you convince everybody in America, oh, we know what the bots are now. It says bot. There's a little graphic with a picture of a robot in it next to something posted by a bot. So we know what the bots are. So you convince everyone in America that all the bots have been identified. And then you incentivize some 14-year-old in Ukraine to go out and create a bot that can't be detected and fail to verify it so that the bots are back and more insidious than ever because they're not labeled. You see the problem with that? If you label it, all the bad guys have to do is say, oh, not going to label my bot. I'm going to come up with a bot that you can't detect. And then we're back to square one. Don't label the bots. Not a good idea. Number two, determine the origin of posts and accounts. Again, this is a suggestion that can only be written by someone who doesn't understand how the internet works. 14-year-olds can fake their location online. Do you honestly think you're going to stand a chance against the Russian intelligence services? Against determined 13-year-olds from Mongolia? Against bored Singapore high school students? No. You can't do it. You cannot determine the origin of posts and accounts. It is too simple to fake that information. And if you go out and convince everyone that you've done it, same problem. The bad guys can now operate in plain sight, and you give them more credibility because they've figured out how to beat your system. Don't do this. Require companies to identify inauthentic accounts. Same problem. What is the standard of an inauthentic account? Okay, if somebody comes along and sets up an account and says, I'm Adolf Hitler, well, Adolf Hitler's dead. All right, we know that's an inauthentic account. If somebody sets up an account that says, I'm Donald Trump, We can verify that. And we can determine, yes, that's Donald Trump. No, that's not Donald Trump. Somebody sets up an account that says, I'm Joe Schmedlap. Well, what do we know about Joe Schmedlap? How many Joe Schmedlaps are there? What does Joe Schmedlap do? What's important about Joe Schmedlap? That's what the Russians did, by the way, in 2016. The Russians didn't go out and create accounts that were like, I'm Vladimir Putin, you know, or I'm George Soros. They went out and created accounts and said, I'm Joe Schmedlap. And boy, this violence against black people makes me mad. They posed as ordinary, everyday Americans. They posed as the most boring people on earth. And they will do it again. They just threw out another bunch of accounts from the Russian intelligence services. Because the Russians are determined to do this again, and because they can do it again, and they know they can do it again. Because there is no way that any of these companies are going to be able to authenticate or verify fake accounts. People who are sophisticated at manipulating user behavior online will always come up with new tools to manipulate user behavior online. If you come out with a label that says this is where this was posted from, or this account is authentic, or this account is a bot, all you do is give unsuspecting Americans a false sense of security. Because they look at the verifications and they look at where the post came from, they said, well, this looks legit to me. Checks off all the government requirements. Must be a legit post. No, it's just some Russian who figured out how to beat it. Some bored kid in Hawaii. Too much time in his hands. Figured out how to beat it. Number four, I kind of like. Make platforms liable for state law torts, including defamation, for failing to remove deepfakes or other manipulated content. I would say this should extend to any sort of slander or any sort of libel that shows up. Yes, let's call Facebook and YouTube and Apple and Spotify what they are. They are publishers. And as publishers, they have no immunity from defamation laws. So let's see every kid that's been cyberbullied. Let's see every business that's been unfairly maligned because somebody got a cold crouton in their Caesar salad. Let's see everybody who misrepresents themselves as someone else held accountable. And let's see Facebook and Google and Apple and Spotify held accountable as well. Because I'll tell you something. If you want to make a real difference with those companies, expose them to billions of dollars of liability and see how quickly they tighten down on what happens on their platforms. Access to data. This is another one of Senator Mark Warner's suggestions. Force large platforms like Facebook to let public interest researchers access their databases. Hey, that worked great when Facebook gave all that data to that university researcher over in England. Remember that? The guy that then sold it to Steve Bannon? Senator Mark Warner is actually saying the government should force them to do this. No, Senator Warner. If you want access to a lot of data, have your friends call Homeland Security and look in their database. Because Lord knows they're still hoovering up everything that we post and every phone call that we make. Create an interagency task force. This, I guess, would involve the FBI, DHS, CIA. I don't know why. What this would do. This would combat fraud, fakes, make it easier to track the Russians. Fine. Okay, I'm good. You want to have a Russian, you want to have an interagency task force, go ahead. Set it up. Give President Trump his Space Force while you're at it. Because I want Space Force. We need Space Force. Regulate disclosure for online political ads. I'm Derek Gary, and I approve this message. Basically blaring at the end of, or something to that extent. I'm fine with this. I think that's a good idea. I think that's a workable idea. I think that should be in place now. That should have been in place years ago. That if you run a political ad, you have to say explicitly who you are. In some states, by the way, you already have to do that. I've done political work. I've seen this. That should be the law of the land. We should require whoever posts a political ad to tell you who they are. Create a public initiative for media literacy. Whenever a Democrat uses a phrase like this, create a public initiative, what they're saying is, I need $10 billion, an office building in Washington, D.C., 3,000 employees, and a commitment for a 20-year budget plan. Really, what we need to solve this problem is a pamphlet that says, don't trust what you read on the internet. That's internet literacy, right there. That is information literacy. Don't trust what you read on the internet. Don't trust what you read on Facebook. Put it in a pamphlet. Give it out in all the schools. Give it out in all the schools at the start of every school year. Give it out again in the middle of the school year. Give it out again at the end of the school year. And we don't need the bureaucracy. That's it. It's all you need. Don't trust what you read on the internet. Problem solved. No bureaucracy necessary. Develop a deterrence doctrine. Basically, Senator Warner is saying internet shenanigans are grounds for war and we should have appropriate responses listed and known by our enemies. All right. This is what government does, by the way. I'm fine with that. You want to create a deterrence doctrine. You want to elucidate what the penalties are for messing around with us. Go for it. Let's do it. I don't know at what point you start dropping bombs on people, but that's more or less what they're saying here. It's probably a lot of financial sanctions, and we see how well those work. Create an information fiduciary. This would require internet companies to have the same liability for the misuse of your personal data that financial advisors have for the misuse of your finances. This is a bonkers idea. The owners of those companies, Facebook, Apple, Spotify, Google, all the rest of them, are going to lobby this out of existence. So we can forget about that one. Let the FTC have privacy rulemaking authority. Why have Congress write privacy rules when we can have a politically driven, unaccountable government agency draw up the rules? Oh, because the Supreme Court is going to strike that down. How about this, Senator Warner? Let Congress have privacy rulemaking authority. Wait a minute. It already does. Write some laws. Comprehensive data protection legislation. Basically, Mark Warner wants to see something like the GDPR over the United Kingdom that basically says you must opt in for data collection. You can refuse data collection, but you must still have access to the website. You have a right to see the data that the website has collected about you. You have the right to have that data removed upon your request, and you have the right to take that data and move it to a different provider at any point in time. I believe at some point in time we are going to see something like the GDPR here in the United States of America, but I think it's going to be a while. Most websites, the really big websites that operate internationally are already GDPR compliant because the European Union doesn't care if your website's in Europe or in the United States. If Europeans are using your website and your website is not compliant, they can take 4% of your annual profits. Guess what happened around the time the GDPR went into effect? Everybody updated their terms of service. Everybody updated their privacy policy. Remember that? Back in May, you couldn't log onto a website without all these pop-ups coming up. We've changed our terms of service. New privacy policy. Please read. Some folks actually put pop-ups and said, do you agree to let us take your data? Everybody's like clicking these pop-ups like, I just want my fantasy score. I just want to see the new headline about The Bachelorette. What is all this stuff? That is the threat of monetary harm actually generating a meaningful response from the technology industry. That's how you do it. Make algorithms auditable by the federal government. To what end? Is the government going to go in and be like, yep, that's an algorithm. Yep, it's collecting data. Yep, it's displaying stuff. Yep. What are you going to do with that authority? You don't even have an idea of what to do with that authority. So that is a non-starter. And these companies are going to jump up and down and scream trade secrets anyway. This one I like a lot. And I would like to see this added. Eliminate dark patterns. For those who don't know, dark patterns in graphic design are elements that are designed to make you choose a certain response without thinking. And to give you an example of this, let's say you go to a website and they throw a pop-up at you that says, would you like our newsletter? And at the bottom of that message, there is a giant, massive, full-color button that says, click here. Under the words, would you like our newsletter? Click here. Great big, huge button. And then underneath that, in like little tiny plain text, it says, no, thank you. Not today, or whatever. That is a dark pattern that has been designed to make the option that is beneficial to the company, the business, the most attractive. You may look at it and just click it absentmindedly and say, yeah, sure, whatever. Then your inbox starts filling up with all these newsletters and advertisements that you don't want because you click the button. Eliminating the dark pattern would basically say the yes option and the no option must be given equal weight, must be given equal presentation. You cannot favor one over the other. I like that idea. Most of the rest of this deals with things that are similar to the GDPR. There are two more that are unique. Number one, let researchers and startups access federal databases. Yeah, so they can sell the data to use to Google, right? Like, I'm a researcher. Let me get the federal database. Hey, Google, I just got the federal database. What's it worth to you? No, we're not doing that, Senator Warner. The only thing worse than a database is two databases that are merged. Trust me on this. Designate certain services as essential facilities. Senator Warner uses Google Maps as an example of this. And basically says Google Maps is so embedded, so critical to the way that so many services in this country work, that it is now an essential service. Therefore, Google has to make Google Maps available to everyone who asks for it, whether it's the government, whether it's a small business, whether it's a private citizen. They can charge for it. They can make you pay for it, but they cannot make you pay an exorbitant fee. And they cannot pick and choose who gets access to it. That's a good idea. So out of these 20 proposals that he's got here, there are three that are worthwhile. Designate certain services as essential facilities. Yes, I agree with that. Google Maps should be available to anybody who wants to use Google Maps. Require disclosure for online political ads. That is a good idea. Some states do that right now. So that should be the law of the land. We should be doing that every place. Eliminate dark patterns. Yes. Let's stop putting misleading user interfaces out there. That is a great idea. I am 100% on board with all of those suggestions, those three suggestions from Mark Warner out of the 20. The remainder of the 20 are either not workable or would make things worse for the American people by giving us a false sense of confidence about what we're reading and what we're seeing. And when it comes to the area of media literacy, it's very simple. There is one very, very, very simple message. Don't trust what you read on the internet, period. Don't trust it. It's the same message that most of us were taught when we were growing up with regard to television and newspapers. Don't trust what you read in the newspaper. Don't trust what you see on TV. Research. Go get a second source. Get some corroboration. There have always been exceptions to that. Generally speaking, we trust what we read in the New York Times. Generally speaking, we trust what they say on CNN because we know that they go to great lengths, theoretically, in those organizations, to make sure that what is presented to us is accurate and reasonable. Don't trust what you read on the internet. That's all you need. That is all the media literacy you need, my friends. And if you learn that one lesson, you'll be a smarter, happier American. Favorite thing of the past week and the strangest thing of the past week, coming up in just a few seconds here on WMFO Medford.
You're not wired to have a response to this sound. You're neutral to it. You hear it every time you finish a meal and never feel anything. But if we were able to associate this sound with a new stimulus, save the food, we've achieved pulling a natural response from you. Save the food. Why are we doing this, you may ask? Save the food. because this ad is trying to change your after-meal behavior through brainwashing. Because food waste costs the average family $1,500 a year. Save the food, cha-ching! And $1,500 extra is like getting a pay raise. Save the food, cha-ching!
You're promoted!
Which could pay for your child's braces. Save the food, cha-ching!
You're promoted!
Check out my braces!
So, when you hear this sound, rethink your behaviour. Cook it, store it, share it. Just don't waste it. For tips and recipes, visit savethefood.com. Brought to you by NRDC and the Ad Council.
Everything is awesome. Everything is cool when you're part of a team. Everything is awesome when we live in our dream. Everything is better when we stick together. Side by side, you and I, gonna win forever. Let's party forever. We're the same, I'm like you, you're like me. We're all working in harmony. Everything is awesome. Everything is cool when you're part of the team. Everything is awesome when we're living our dreams.
Tell you MFO Medford, it is The Big Picture. Derek Gary with you for a few more minutes before On the Tell. Mikey D comes in with everything you need to know about the Boston music scene. 855-915-9636 is the telephone number. Time now for What's Hot, favorite thing from the past week. And you know what August means. Halloween candy at the supermarket is already 2 weeks old, and Lay's is back with another flavor challenge. They may have gone overboard this year because there are 12 different types of chips for you to try, and they're based around Taste of the USA. That's their theme this year. These are all regional favorites. So, among the regular Lay's, you can get 8 flavors. It'll be easy to see which parts of the country these represent. Cajun Spice, Chesapeake Bay Crab Spice, Chili Con Queso, Deep Dish Pizza, Fried Pickles with Ranch, New England Lobster Roll, Pimento Cheese, and Thai Sweet Chili. You can get those online. You can get them in stores. They're all over the place. There are 4 flavors of Wavy Lays, including bacon-wrapped jalapeno, including bacon-wrapped jalapeno pepper, fried green tomatoes, ketchup, the famous Canadian ketchup fries, and West Coast truffle fries. I have tried 2 of these to date, and the 2 that I have tried, I cannot really recommend. One of them was the Chesapeake Bay Crab Spice. Now, all this had to do was taste like Old Bay spice. All it had to do was taste like Old Bay, and I'm in. It did not taste anything at all like Old Bay. Therefore, it's a loser. It's a pass. It's not bad, but if you're looking for that Old Bay seasoning flavor, you're not going to get that from this flavor. The other one, which is the biggest disappointment I think I've ever had with one of these Lay's flavor challenge chips, is New England Lobster Roll. It pains me to say this because I think a lot of people had high hopes for this one because they claim it tastes like a lobster roll. Well, it tastes nothing at all like a lobster roll. It doesn't taste like lobster. It doesn't taste like mayonnaise. It doesn't taste like celery. It doesn't taste like lemon. It doesn't taste like a buttered bun. There is no flavor in this remotely like a lobster roll. And it was so off that I was sitting there thinking to myself, they must have put the wrong chips into this bag. Because really, it tastes more like the excellent Southern Biscuit chips from a couple years ago, a weaker version of that. And I was just so horribly disappointed in it. So save yourself, please, save yourself the experience of the lobster roll chips. We're going to try some of them on the air next week, and I think ketchup is going to be on that list because that one looks very, very promising. And we close, as we always do, with That's the Thing That Happened, the strangest story of the past week. South Carolina, 32-year-old Lauren Cutshaw, got pulled over for speeding in Bluffton early Saturday morning. She'd been drinking and was in possession of marijuana. Then she tried to talk her way out of it, offering the following reasons why she should not be arrested. She had perfect grades her whole life. She graduated from a, quote, high-accredited university, end quote, high-accredited. She was a sorority girl, cheerleader, and National Honor Society member, and she was dating a cop. She then closed with these arguments. Quote, I'm a very clean, thoroughbred white girl, end quote, and quote, I'm a white, clean girl, end quote. When a police officer asked her what that had to do with anything, Cutshaw replied, quote, you're a cop. You should know based on the people that come in this room.